Welcome to the Soul of Travel podcast. I'm Christine Weinbrenner-Eyrich, the founder of Lotus Sojourns, a book lover, yogi, mom of three girls, and your guide on this journey. We are here to discover why women who are seasoned travelers, industry professionals, and global community leaders fall in love with the people and places of this planet. Join me to explore how travel has inspired our guests to change the world. We seek to understand the driving force, unending curiosity, and wanderlust that can best be described as the soul of travel. Soul of Travel Podcast is a proud member of the Journey Woman family, where we work to create powerful forums for women to share their wisdom and inspire meaningful change in travel. In each soulful conversation, you'll hear compelling travel stories alongside tales of what it takes to bring our creative vision to life as we're living life with purpose, chasing dreams, and building businesses to make the world a better place. But the real treasure here is the story of the journey. As we reflect on who we were, who we are, and who we're becoming, we are travelers, thought leaders, and heart-centered change makers. And this is the soul of travel. Lola Ekinmede is a Nigerian photographer and travel writer based in Stockholm, Sweden. She's an editor-in-chief for Slow Travel Stockholm, and has written for National Geographic Traveler, BBC, and CNN, among others. She has been named a 2022 Hasselblad heroine and received the 2018 Travel Photographer of the Year Bill Muster Award. She was honored with the MIPAD 100 Most Influential People of African Descent Award within Media and Culture in 2018. Her work has appeared in National Geographic, BBC, CNN, The Guardian, Travel and Leisure, Slate, The Travel Channel, Lonely Planet, Forbes, Fodders Afar, National Geographic Channel, Adventure Magazine, several in-flight magazines, The New York Times, and others. In addition to contributing to several travel books, Lola is the author of the following: the 2018 Lowell Thomas Award winner for Best Travel Book, Due North, best-selling Lagom, Swedish Secret of Living Well, In Every Mirror She's Black, an Amazon Best Pick of the Month, Good Morning America Book Club Buzz Pick, just to name some of the recognition received for this book, sharing the multifaceted stories of three Black women in Stockholm. She is also the author of the recent follow-up novel, Everything Is Not Enough, where the three women's stories cross through themes of place, prejudice, and patriarchy in Europe. In our conversation, Lola and I discuss what it takes to create balance in our lives as mothers and travel professionals, and our shared value of connection, and how that shows up in her photography, travel, and life. She also shares her thoughts on the question, who gets to share the story of a place? Referring back to her 2022 article in adventure.com. And we also talk a bit about how they get to or might be expected to share their story. She also shares an update on Local Purse, which you can hear more about by going back to episode 26, where I first spoke with Lola and her business partner, Sarah Mansouri. I always love every minute I get to share with Lola, and I know you'll love hearing from her too. Join me now for my soulful conversation with Lola Ekinmede. Welcome to Soul of Travel Podcast. Today, I am so excited to be bringing a return guest back to the show. She is someone who has had an early passion for geography, dreams of traveling the world, becoming a best-selling author, and working for National Geographic. And these dreams might have seemed too big for some little girls,
But like many of our guests today, these earliest dreams looking back really serve as a roadmap for where we are today. And I'm so excited to walk through a few of these dreams with you and for our guests to learn from you along the way. So welcome back to the podcast, Lola Akinmede Akerstrom. I'm so delighted to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just a huge honor. Thank you.
Thank you. And our guests can go back and listen to your first interview with your partner, Sarah. And we were talking about Local Purse, which was how I first learned of you. And that was launched during, it seems a lifetime ago, but during the early days of COVID. And I just fell in love with that project and then learned a little bit more about you, although I didn't know all of these things. And after we got off our conversation, I honestly did more research and I was like, oh, I could have talked to them both for so much longer. So I'm really glad to have you back. For our listeners, I would love for you to just take a moment, Lola, to introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about who you are.
Absolutely. So my name is Lola Akinmede Akerstrom and I call myself a storyteller. I was born in Nigeria, educated in the US, and I call Sweden home. And, you know, on paper, I've done a lot of things. I've been, you know, grateful and blessed to be able to be an award-winning writer, international best-selling author, award-winning photographer, traveled around the world. But at the core of everything I do, I am a storyteller that's really interested in human connection. So for me, it's I'm grateful to have different platforms to be able to tell my stories, whether it's through writing or photography or art, you know, or different projects. So that's kind of who I am in a nutshell.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I love the storyteller kind of space for all those things to unfold, because I think that's what really has drawn me to your work over and over, is that I get caught up in the story, whether it's a literal story of your novel or whether it's an image and kind of the pieces I can see within the photo, or if it's, you know, even a trip that you've created, like every single thing has this nuance of story. So I can't wait to kind of talk a little bit more about that as we move along. But what I'd love to hear from you is, when did you first fall in love with traveling, and how did those first experiences really shape you as a person and as a traveler?
Absolutely. So I come from a traveling family, right? I grew growing up in Nigeria. My grandfather was actually in the shipping business, so he traveled a lot. And then my dad retired as a geologist, which meant he also traveled around the world a lot. And so I come from a family where we, I don't want to use the word explore, but we are always seeking new cultural experiences. My first trip out of Nigeria was before I was even 1 year old. And then we traveled a lot. And I knew that movement, that kind of, you know, interacting with different cultures was going to be in my future somehow. I just didn't know how it was going to manifest. And then, of course, in school, geography was my favorite subject. I mean, I loved maps. In fact, when I moved to the US to go study, I minored in geography. So my major was information systems. I minored in geography. And I specialized in something called Geographic Information Systems, GIS. And I always say it's kind of like think programming interactive maps like Google Maps. So I did that for over 12 years. That was my career before getting into travel. So in a sense, you know, I was always thinking spatially. And I think the moment when I realized travel writing and travel photography was going to be that route was in 2002. So I'm dating myself. 2002, I volunteered with an expedition race in Fiji, and I was on their web team. And what we had to do was write up stories, take photos, and give a daily dispatch on the website from the field. So if the competitors were navigating through a village, we had to write about the village and what they were doing. We were writing about Fijian culture. And in that moment, I remember the exact moment, standing in the middle of a shallow river. I looked around and I have a photo of that moment thinking, oh my God, look where I am. I mean, one of the most remote parts of Fiji, like really in the interior, getting to experience this and then telling the world about it. I think this is what I want to do. And so that's kind of how everything came together. The travel writing, the love for geography, and then with photography, that came about because I used to be an oil painter. And so when I traveled, I'll take a photo I wanted to paint when I got back, and then realized I was duplicating effort and just kind of started using photography as that next medium of expression. So that's kind of how everything came together.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that because I think, especially for people who are curious about how to get into this industry, when you tell so many people it like happens to you, they don't really understand. But I feel like there's so many people that have found themselves like you, literally standing in this moment where you realize that you're in the next thing that you're doing, or that this thing that has spoken to you has arrived. And it's a very, it doesn't have a like concrete stamp or label. It's not something that people can go out and be like, oh yes, so I see I do this, this, and this, and then I end up here. It's like, no, you have to let the universe just put you where you're supposed to be. And I think also for many travelers, that's part of what is so alluring is that the magic like reveals itself to you when you're least looking for it, like in travel, in writing,
Absolutely.
in art. I think it all is connected.
Yes. No, absolutely. And you just feel it. I always say it's like your spirit, the soul whispering to you, because it just feels right in that moment. And nobody else can tell you, you just know. And once you know, it comes with a certain courage and audacity to follow it, because people always ask, how did you get into Nat Geo, BBC, all of that very early on when you had no experience pitching and writing for publications? I was just audacious. I said, you know what? I have a story to tell. I went here, I took photos. I'm going to pitch it to the editor. What's the worst that could happen? They just ignore my email. But what's the best that could happen? They respond and say, tell me more, right? So once your spirit and, the universe says, this is it, you feel it, then it gives you enough courage and bravery to follow it, and a bit more resilience and grit to go after it, because this is what it is that moves your spirit.
Oh my goodness, I love both those, and that's again kind of the space between what's the worst that could happen and what's the best that could happen. Like it feels like it would be horrible to get a rejection, but really, I mean, it's going to probably hurt for a minute, but you're going to be over it. But that possibility of what's the best that could happen, like what if you actually get to live your wildest dreams because you had a little bit of courage in a moment and just like overcome that, whatever it might feel like to hear the no. So I love that so
Absolutely.
much. And then also that whispers of your soul's calling, I think, like again, I go back to that moment, and I think with many guests we have this kind of like, I call it like a little girl moment where like you know the truth of who you are. And like even myself, when I look back at like what I wanted to be when I was little, I really wanted to be an actress, but I wanted to be an actress so that I could make a lot of money, so that I could have be involved in philanthropy, and because I wanted people to listen to what I had to say, and I wanted to be able to like have the stage and then be able to give it to the other people whose voices I thought needed to be heard. And that's kind of a, I don't know what other little kid thinks about those sorts of things. I also used to imagine
Incredible.
myself interviewing people all the time. Like someone interesting would be talking, and I would think, "Ooh, you should ask this question. Wait, you
Oh
missed
my
your
goodness.
opportunity to learn more about this." And I like practiced interviewing, and I had no idea, like, that just was like this who I was, and all of those things got buried over time. Maybe different to your story, but as they revealed themselves to me again, I was like, oh, you always had this same dream. And so I just think it's for me, it is always so amazing to see those like whispers become reality in people's lives.
Absolutely. And those whispers, they never leave you. They're always there from when you're in that little girl moment, and it's like you You hear it even decades after decades, you still hear it because you know that's where you're supposed to go, you're supposed to head, right? So even though I went down a technical path, it still guided me towards it because it still got the geography in there, it still got the travel in there, right? So yes, absolutely. And I think it's fascinating that kids already know at that age, you feel it, but you just don't know how it's going to manifest in the future. So.
Yeah. Well, and my oldest daughter, she just turned to me the other day and she's like, "You know, I want to be a ballerina, and I thought I was going to be a physical therapist for ballerinas when I couldn't dance anymore," because she's like very logical. She's like, "Now I really
Yes.
think when I get done being a ballerina, I want to be ballerina. I want to be a quantum physicist or something." And I was like, "Okay, your whispers are very loud and very specific."
I know, and I love that. You never know, you know, you
Never
never
know.
know what's gonna come out coming out of that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how it comes together. Well, as I have talked to you about before we hopped on this call, there are so many things that we can talk about. And to narrow it down, I kind of went through some of my favorite things that you have written or interviews that really influenced or inspired me that I think will resonate with our listeners as well. And I wanted to start with, speaking of family, you have talked a lot about how you prioritize your family and your children in your career choices. And I know this is something I have struggled with even when I started my business, Lotus Sojourns. I had been a stay-at-home mom for a period of time, so I had a sole focus on them, but I really wanted to return to my travel career. And I remember taking my oldest and sitting down with her and saying, "You know, I think I want to start a business, and this is what it is. This is why it's important to me. I really miss traveling. I really miss community. I really miss creating spaces for women to connect and creating opportunities for other women." And, you know, so I just told her, "This is going to take my time away from you. You're not going to have my whole focus like you have had so far." And so we had a little bit of a chat, and then she's like, "Mom, you have to do this. This is what you're supposed to do, and we'll be fine."
Yes.
But I felt like that conversation was really important, and it's kind of the thing that I can check my decisions against, I guess, is that moment. But I would love to hear from you. How do you weigh these choices? And also, you know, what example do you hope to set for your children by living a life aligned with your passions?
Absolutely. And isn't it incredible that children know what makes their parents also happy besides them? They just know. They know, besides all the hugs and kisses you give them and tucking them into bed when at night, they know what lights their parents' soul. They just feel it. I was recently in Estonia over the summer. I was there at a photography workshop and I posted a little status on WhatsApp and my daughter said, "It makes me so happy to see you smile." And she knew. I wasn't with her at that moment, but I was doing something that made her see a mom smile. So with my kids, one thing I'm showing them, first of all, you know, I was the breadwinner for a lot for the longest time, you know. Now I am, I don't want to say unfortunately, because you know, it's we co-parent well together. We're still friends, but I am divorced. And but while I was married, I was the breadwinner, you know, and so I had to work. My husband, my ex at the time, was going to school studying, and so he was more at home. And then I had to go out and work. But even now, I'm very intentional about the work I do. I've always been intentional about the travels I choose. And what I'm also showing my parents, my kids, is that it's okay for their mom to do other things as well, right? Because society can try to box them and put labels and say, this is what you're supposed to do as a woman, as an African, as a Black woman, and then busting all those labels for them. So my daughter can say, you know what? If society tries to box me in, she can say, have you met my mother? That there is no limits to what I can do and choose to do. And so that is also what I'm modeling for them. The stories and the issues, especially in my novels, that I'm tackling is also for my kids because they are also Swedish, right? And so I'm having those difficult conversations through my work so that the soil is fertile, becomes more fertile for them to thrive in the future in their own country, right? As brown Swedes. So there's so everything I do is intentional and it's for their sakes. I don't just travel for the sake of travel. It has to have meaning, it has to have purpose, it has to continue to further cultural connection. And with my kids, they also travel a lot. I actually just got back recently from London with both of them. I just don't share on social media, right? So what I share on social media is just my work. I keep them protected. I keep it private, and we travel a lot together. I take them around with me a lot, but I keep all of that offline, you know? So in a sense, it can be difficult, and it was difficult for many years. In fact, I have an article coming out soon that is about why I no longer have mommy guilt as a travel writer, because we've chosen, or I've chosen, one of the most harshly judged careers, especially if you're a mom with smaller, younger kids, right? The world isn't ready to make space for that possibility that you could be a mom with younger kids that travels. And so in that piece, I said, at the end of the day, what that matters, and that's to your point, is what your children think. You spoke to your daughter, you spoke to your kids, right? I spoke to my kids. My kids see it and feel it. So that is how it is, you know, being intentional about the travels, making sure that my kids are on board in terms of, you know, how do you feel? Is it okay? Do you want me to, you know, okay, do you want me to cancel this trip? And they say, yes, stay, I do, right? But also knowing that what others think doesn't matter to me. I actually do not care what others think or how they feel like I should be a mom to my kids, right? So that's how it is.
Yeah, I love that. And I also was just thinking, as you said, the last, you know, line of it not mattering other people's opinions of your choices is actually maybe how the guilt is released, right? The guilt only becomes because you feel like you're not holding up and measuring to someone else's expectations. Exactly. I guess if you have guilt based on your own expectations of yourself, then maybe you have a different conversation to have.
Exactly. But yeah. No, the guilt usually comes from other people's, because that's usually the first thing, you know. Wow. Especially when I was married, it was, wow. And your husband takes care of your kids? Yes, it's our kids. Like, it's not just my kids, you know? And so society still has this kind of view in terms of mothers and their roles, mm-hmm. and giving more leeway to dads pushing strollers and applauding every single thing they do versus moms juggling every single thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so society isn't there yet, even though it feels like, or society tries to say, oh yeah, you know, it's fine, moms can be working moms and this. No, it still doesn't leave space and grace for moms to do both.
Yeah, to moms to also be humans and individuals.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. But also just even do both, to be career women and fantastic moms.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Which, you know, going back to that point of your children seeing you smile and seeing you alive and vibrant, like, that's so good for them. And they're okay when we're not there for a week or, you know, an amount of time. Yes. And it also can give partners the opportunity to be a parent. They might not have the opportunity to be, if we are there kind of withholding those stereotypical roles. And this is just reminding me, I'm going to give a shout out to one of my good friends. She just launched a podcast called Rebel Mothers, and she's talking about like the social constructs of motherhood. So if anybody is listening to Lola and I right now and getting like really excited about this conversation, they should definitely listen to her podcast, and because that, I feel like this is a really important thing that so many women on my podcasts are tackling, because there are all of these kind of definitions and boxes that have been created for us that we are struggling with. So
yes,
I love that. Absolutely. The next thing I would love to talk to you about is connection. I think this is a shared value that you and I both have. It's a real priority in our lives and our careers. And I think, as I mentioned before, it's really why I'm so drawn to your work, like the connection I feel to the images and really to like the people in those images. I feel like I get really lost in their stories just from seeing the way that you capture somebody. It really starts to invite you into who they are. And the same with with your writing, and even like I mentioned, the work that you do, it's so much about this storytelling. And I think with that, that's connection. But I would love to hear from you why it's so important and how photography, writing, and travel all allow you and others to create those deep connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I lost you there for a little bit, but no, I think connection for me has always been key. So I'm Nigerian and I'm Yoruba. And in Nigeria, we have over 250 different tribes speaking 500 plus languages and dialects. And in Lagos alone, there's probably a cross section of those 250 tribes living in the size of New York City. And so, for us to be able to live side by side and understand each other and respect each other, we have to create connection, connect on our similarities. And so, what I do in my work is, even though we are drastically different, how do we first connect on our similarities so you see a bit of you in me? And then we can start making space for our differences because we've already connected on the similarities. That's why if people are mothers, they even though they're different, we first connect on that similarity and then start expanding towards, okay, these are my own values. This is why I do things differently, right? And then also connection for me is so important because when I first moved to the US as a teenager, I was isolated a lot. And I was isolated a lot because people weren't really listening to me, to my culture, to my identity back then. They wanted to push me into a box. The minute I came into the US, you're a Black woman, this is your box. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm so much more than that as well. I've got, a cultural identity. I've got this, I've got that. There's so much I can also offer than just this color of my skin, which growing up in Nigeria was like if somebody said, excluded me because of that, we just laugh, in your face, like that doesn't make sense. Give me a better reason, right? And so when I was isolated and excluded a lot, one thing I always say is isolation is a very cruel space to find yourself in against your own will. And so that allowed me, so that was what started influencing my voice. That's how I found my voice as a storyteller. I'm like, people are not connecting with me because they didn't know who I was. They didn't get to see who I am. And so that's what I bring into my photography, especially my people photography, is when you look into the eyes of someone. So you just see them and look at them and acknowledge them fully without looking at their backgrounds or what's in the environment. You just connect with them, you see them. And so that is, so everything I do, my work, the writing, the photography is the kind of physical manifestation of the words I see you, in the novels, in the travel writing, in the opinion pieces. Everything I do is I see you. Now tell me who you are yourself, right? And so that usually comes, I always say people that are struggling to find their voice or their purpose. It usually comes from a source of pain or a space that was denied you. Something, if you're looking for it, go back, to look at some of those past quote unquote traumas, right? That's where you might find the semblances of your voice as a storyteller.
Gosh, just as you said that, like this is just saying, I see you. And like in receiving your work and your art, what I feel when I see it is I feel seen, or I feel permission to be seen. Like there's some communication that happens in the way that you are creating space. So thank you so much for sharing
Thank
that.
you.
I think
Thank you.
it's a magical gift, and I think if people aren't familiar with your work, I really hope that they turn themselves in that direction, because I really have grown a lot just by kind of witnessing your ability to capture that essence so quickly and communicate it, and just create space for each person to be in those moments. It's just really magical. And
Thank
I'm
you.
thinking in particular some images recently from Mongolia, and I could tell, for one, your love of the place you were, because it like
Yes.
radiated from every single image and every written piece, but those images themselves just made me feel so much love and connection to someone I didn't know, but I could just feel it living in that space.
Thank you. No, thank you so much. Thank you. I mean, I think that's, for me, that's what it is. My photos don't have to be super fancy or like really, I don't go for epic shots. I go for shots that show emotion, that show that eye-to-eye contact and the connection to see that, we've seen each other fully. And that's the space I'm always gonna be in. I don't have to create photos that just wows people, but then that's it. I want photos that will make you stop and look at the person and say, "Oh my God, I see Yannis Beck. I see, all the people I'm seeing there. I see Lash, or I see Augusta in Greenland, or like, so you just see the people for who they are."
Yeah. Well, kind of along these lines, I think that, voice is so important. It's important for us to discover our own voice. It's also really important for so many voices to be a part of storytelling so that we can see things from different perspectives that aren't our own. So that we can begin to understand. I think also this is why storytelling is so powerful.
Hey, this is Christine, interrupting this conversation to share about a company I learned about recently and really love called Greet Her. Their mission is to empower women to travel safely and confidently by connecting them with verified local greeters. Their greeters are female guides who can be booked to explore the world in a unique way. I scheduled founder Vanessa Carroll for a podcast interview right away to learn more about her and Greet Her. When I look back at my favorite travel experiences, many include connecting with local women and learning more about their lives and the community I visit. Moments that transcend cultural barriers and create a deep connection between women. This is the foundation of my small group experiences at Lotus Sojourns. And as a solo traveler or traveling with my family and friends, I still want these meaningful connections. I love Greet Her because as I travel, I can connect with women who have been verified and explicitly matched to me, my travel style, and what I'm looking for in the destination. It is also important to me to support local women when I travel. Greet Her easily allows me to connect with local women, hire them as a guide, and have them share their favorite locally owned and women-owned businesses with me. In some countries, it is challenging for women to become certified guides, and Greet Her helps women overcome that barrier. They can share their knowledge and expertise in an area without having to become a professional guide. The women are background checked and vetted. I love that this work allows them to offer tours that match their personal schedules so they can work around other family duties or obligations. They are also often paid above what they would be paid through other agencies. It is so easy to find your local bestie wherever you travel. You'll find local guides in Mexico, Turkey, Morocco, Guatemala, and most of the top visited cities in Europe. Just visit their website, select your experience, and let them know the location, number of people, and length of tour. You'll sign up and create a profile that will also go through the verification process, and then just wait for your email matching you to your local female guide and enjoy your journey. Your greeter will share safety tips and local recommendations and tailor your experience. If you'd like to hear more from Vanessa about her journey to create Greet Her, you can listen to episode 120 of the Soul of Travel podcast. Perhaps just pause this episode, download hers to listen later. Greet Her is also sharing an exclusive discount for Soul of Travel listeners. You can save 20% on your first time booking at www.greether.com. That's GREETHER.com with code SOULOFTRAVEL20. Use this discount to connect with Greet Her in more than 90 countries and 450 cities. Again, that discount code is SOULOFTRAVEL20 for 20% off on your first time booking. Thank you for letting me take a bit of your time to share. I hope you love Greet Her as much as I do. Now let's hop back over to our soulful conversation.
And so two ways that I want to go with this, we'll start here and then we'll kind of go the other direction, but how we mentioned a little bit, but how do you cultivate your creative voice and then hold true to it? Because I think especially people who are pushing outside of that box are going to be, they're going to come up against resistance and that moment where they could choose to be a little quieter, or they could choose to be subdued, or they can choose to really act upon that voice that's true to them. So how do you think creatives stay true to that voice?
So I think I'll give you an example, because I think if I give you a real example, that will communicate how I do it. So my first novel, so I've written four books now, kind of four physical books, and I've contributed to many other books. But my four books, the first two are nonfiction, and the third one is a novel, and it was called In Every Mirror She's Black. And that novel got over 70 rejections, and we stopped counting at 70, which meant it probably got close to 100 or more. And we kept getting rejection after rejection, for many reasons, but one of the reasons was that editors wanted me to change my voice in it. The books haven't been published in Swedish or translated to Swedish yet, because one of the Swedish publishers said they wanted me to tone down the voice of the refugee in the book. In essence, make the person that's already the most invincible in society even more invincible, so they feel better. And I said no. And so that journey to publication was difficult. But then we got the first yes, and then we got more yeses. And now the second novel, I've written again in my own voice. And the point of this is, I could have stopped along the way, because if I just wanted a quick win just to get published, right, I could have said, yes, 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 okay, I'll do anything because I want to get published. But I said no. And it was painful. It was a painful process, because all the rejections came with high praise, but they just, you know, they didn't want it. But now I get to write the stories I want to write, because I said, I stuck true. And that's the only thing you have as a creative, your voice. The minute you start watering it down because of trends, because somebody wants you to water it down, then you just become like everybody else. And that's what you have that's unique, that makes you special and different. And that's why E.E. Cummings is a poem, is one of this particular quote is my absolute favorite. It says, in a world that's doing its best day and night to make you like everybody else is to fight the hardest battle you ever have to fight. Keep fighting, right? To keep fighting, to just stay and be yourself. And so that's what I do. I ask, why not? So when people say, why? Or you're not allowed into this space, or you're not allowed to do this, I say, why not? And people say, this is what you're supposed to be doing as an African woman, as a Black woman. I'm like, why? Give me the valid reasons why I need to limit and shrink myself according to your expectations. And so that is what, you know, I've done over the years. Of course, you know, it's not been perfect. I've gone up and down, especially as an early travel writer. You have to write the articles that get you, you know, the five best things, the top 10s, you know, to get you where you need to go. But I am grateful now that now at this stage of my career, I get to write the stories I want to write. I get to write the opinion pieces I want to write because I stayed true to my voice. I didn't jump on every trend. I wasn't doing things to stay relevant. I was doing things according to my natural evolution as a writer. And that's what I tell people. Don't worry about relevance. Stop trying to stay relevant. Right? You can't try to stay relevant because you're also growing. You're also getting wiser. You're also maturing. You may not connect with the same audience you connected with 5 years ago. Give yourself the space to evolve as a storyteller to the next stage of where you need to be, where your voice needs to be. And then the people that connect at that stage will find you. And then you evolve to the next stage, right? So that's how I do it, is I don't worry about being relevant. And the irony is, and I think I said this in my TED Talk, is the minute you start operating outside of people's boxes for you actually just become impossible to ignore because they're like, oh, is that person? Why is she not fitting all these norms? So that's the irony of it, is in the quest to stay relevant, you actually can become quickly irrelevant quickly. But just staying true to your voice, being a maverick, just doing what you're doing, is what will actually let people see that you've been living your steadfastness, through it all. So that's it.
My goodness. My heart is just like the that was so good. I wish I could rewind and come back and reflect, but I'll have to do it later. But what that kind of brought up for me, I mean, I love that kind of understanding how you will disappear by trying to fit in. And I mean, I don't think it I there's so many people who would, I think, be so important to this world being a greater place if they were allowed to just keep shining and allowed to be them real, their true self. And I see myself, you know, the last 5 or 6 years so drawn when I see someone, I'm like, they are burning their brightest. And you know, you're not just drawn them to them because they're the brightest, but because I think there's a part of ourselves that says, like, I want that too. And I remember reading a book by Glennon Doyle early in her career. And there's also been this moment in a book by Liz Gilbert, and it's like the bathroom floor moment where like you reveal all the ways that you feel inadequate, or that your life is falling apart, that everything is a disaster, and that you're not good enough. And I remember reading those things thinking, oh my gosh, they just, do they know they wrote that where everyone can see it? And in that was like some of the first time that I was reading people saying the things that were kind of like the hardest parts of myself to be true with.
To
Seeing
face, yeah,
someone
to face.
else to face it, yes, and have seeing someone else just like put it out there, then I was like, I didn't know we got to do that. Like, I didn't know we got to be that part of ourselves. Like, I thought that was the part that was actually supposed to be very hidden. And I think it's not just those pieces that maybe are the hard parts or the darker parts, but the brightest parts too, where sometimes people want those put in the same box. And so I think it's such a important time for people to not fall into that trap, I guess, of trying
Absolutely,
to fit
absolutely.
in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to my point of where finding your voice in that path. That bathroom floor moment is where they found their voices, and kind of change course and listening to their true calling. So no, absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely.
So then the next part of this voice piece that I would love to talk to you about is who gets to tell the story and how do they get to tell it? And I think this is something that has come up so much in the past few years with travel writing. People are really questioning. I know you've even had this in your own journey of like,
Yes.
is this my story I get to tell? Is this not?
Yes.
And for me, what I always come back to is that it is your story. So who's telling you you can't tell it? And at the same
Right.
time, when we're telling the story of a place or our experience or something, then are we also not allowing someone else to tell the story because maybe our voice is more prominent? And so there's all of these different parts and pieces. So I would love to just
Correct.
kind of open this up and dive in with whatever is you feel called to
No,
share.
absolutely. And I think that's the point. It's very complex, it's very nuanced. I know a lot of this has come historically over time because it's usually been white people going to other places telling, the stories of locals or I don't want to use the word natives or people that are maybe indigenous communities there and overshadowing, right? And so over the last, I think, 20 years or so is when it's like we're taking back our voice, our stories. Let us tell the stories of our communities. But then I say, if a white man has also lived in Myanmar for 30 years, has he earned the right to tell the story of that place as well? If he has spent his time living, learning the language, getting integrated, is he allowed to? That was the point of the article, to make it more nuanced. So I talked about this. Italy. People are like, oh, Italian cooking, Italian grandmas, all Italians are like, my grandmother makes the best, whatever. Would I take cooking advice from an Italian guy whose grandmother makes incredible Italian food? Or will I take cooking advice from a Black American woman who has spent 20 years learning the fundamentals of Italian cooking? That's the nuances, what I'm talking about, is that sometimes just because you're from a place doesn't mean you are interested in some of the cultural aspects of your own culture. Somebody can spend a lifetime learning that. That doesn't mean that nullifies your voice. That doesn't mean they become the expert on you, but that means they also have a right to tell some of the things they are learning from an outsider perspective, from an objective perspective. And that's why I say when people are getting divorced, they go to an objective therapist, or like they don't go to somebody on either side because it's already biased. And so those are all the kind of themes I explore in my work because I write a lot about Sweden. I'm a Nigerian American woman, right? And I've written a whole book called Lagom on the Swedish mindset, right? Because not only was I married into the culture and I speak the language, I have kind of an insider vested interest in the culture, but I also didn't grow up with Lagom. So I can bring in an objective view that knows all its blind spots because I see, right? And so that's something I will always keep exploring in my work. I mean, we're now working on wrapping up a documentary from Greenland about an incredible Togolese explorer called Tete Michel Pomassi. And he was the first Black man in Greenland in the 60s who lived there. And he wrote, a book, a kind of memoir called An African in Greenland. And again, the point of that expedition was to retrace some of his steps, but also try to answer the question, who gets to tell the story of a place? Because most people did not know about Tete Michel until last year when The Guardian did a really big feature about him turning 80. And people are like, who is this guy? He's cool, he's great. But people didn't know for decades. So, those are the things that I always think about, is, and this is why I also think it's important to diversify the storytellers of a place. So even just going back to our industry travel, where there's always press trips and, there's always a certain kind of travel influencer going to a place who is warmly welcomed. Maybe a brown or black travel influencer goes to the same place, or travel writer or whatever goes there, and may not get the same reception. If they come back and they write their story, then they are telling a more complete picture of the place. It's not like, oh, this place is always amazing, just go there. It's like, this place is amazing if you, and tell some more complete story. So I think it's always important to tell. And even on the flip side, there are some times when I'm invited warmly, invited to the, inside because people can connect differently. And so they can bring you in as a minority or as a brown, fellow brown person or black person. And you can get even cooler, more in-depth, more intimate stories that way. So it really is, I think it's a story, it's a question that doesn't have a clear answer. But for me, I make space for people to be able to tell different stories based on their own lived experiences, based on their vested personal interest in a place. So they're just adding their own voice, their own view to that place. They're not telling the story of the entire place.
Yeah. And I think that the last thing you said is probably the most important kind of note of that is that it's not the story. And I think that's what sometimes happens is it's especially in this world of digital media and social media and things kind of being like you read it and it's taken at face value that this is the truth. And if this is the only article you read about this destination, this is the only truth you
That's it.
know. And it's so easy to have like this kind of curated understanding of a destination, depending on who's giving you the information. And yeah, just for listeners for who are travelers or in the industry, just that that there are so many. And I think we know this as you travel, you understand this more, but there's such a variety of ways of viewing every story and understanding every destination. And that's why I think travel is such an important tool for connection and understanding because you do get the opportunity to experience things in a different way for yourself. And but I think it's also important, like you said, you might have a very different experience in one place than I might have in the same place. And so for me, I feel like that's really exciting because this is how I always have seen the world. And people would be like, I don't understand what you're saying. And now we're starting to have those conversations that get me excited about that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I would love to go back to where we first connected. We mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, local purse. That was how I learned of you and first really felt connected to the change and the impact you were working to create in the industry. So I would love to hear from you, where you are with Local Purse now and kind of what you're hoping to create with that in the future.
Absolutely. So Local Purse, that came about in the pandemic when travel was shut down, and the most vulnerable in travel app were the guides, the local vendors, people that pretty much all of their income came from travel. And so what we were building with Local Purse was a way to virtually shop from these artisans and this and from the markets and get the guides working again virtually, as well as getting some kind of income to the communities. But we didn't want to just create an e-commerce site. That was not the point for us. For us, it's all about cultural connection. You need to see the person you're talking to, connect with them, call them by their name, let them explain to you why they've created this piece of artwork or why they're selling this. And so we started building this, and there was a lot of interest, but I always liken the pandemic, right? Like the old what happened to the travel industry was like Black Friday, where people are just waiting at the door of a Walmart, where they promise they'll do better. They promise they will cut down on their, spending. They promise they will be more conscious once they get back, more responsible once travel opens back up. But they're just waiting at the door so that when travel opened up, everybody just rushed back to trying to recoup. And the spirit behind Local Purse, the initial interest was just evaporated overnight without realizing that this is something that actually needs to be built to sustain. Because now there are things like, for example, there was the devastating earthquake in Morocco recently. There's wars going on, things that are going to still impact travel. And so people just kind of rushed off. And so we've been struggling with Local Purse. We didn't get the funding we were looking for. And so we shut it down, not completely, but we just took a hiatus so that we can figure out the best way to get the right team on board to help us relaunch it properly. Because, you know, this is something that I've been in this industry for so long. I see this need, but people keep they go, just going for the real quick wins, you know, and this is something that really needs to be built. So that's where we are with Locopus. You know, we on our website we put a little note saying that we're just old enough right now. We haven't got the funding for the startup and no startup. You know, we've been bootstrapping it for the last 2 years. And so that's kind of where things are. You know, it's still a passion. I don't want to say just a passion project. It's something that I really want us to grow and build, but it can't be done without some funding, you know, and so that's where it is with Logopus.
Yeah, thank you for giving us that update. And I think, you know, as you said, it's something that people really need to invest in so that systems are in place when these things happen around the world. And as you mentioned, it's the local artisans and guides and that's like these small corners of industry that are
Yes.
impacted. And it was unique when it was this global event that happened, but this
Yes.
happens like a wave constantly around the world
Yes.
with weather and politics and, you know,
Yes.
all these different pieces that can shut down regions for a short period of time. And the impact is just as significant for those local communities when it's one or two communities and not the entire world. So I hope
Exactly.
that you are able to continue to bring awareness to what Local Purse offers to
Yes.
support the industry in times of need, whenever they happen, wherever they happen.
Absolutely. So we're just looking for like, you know, that one angel investor that's going to say, you know what, let's do this. Let's do this. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope they're listening, or I hope someone listening
Yeah,
knows that person. That would make me so happy to know that we could bridge that gap. I also wanted to talk to you about your photography experiences that you recently launched. I've had my eye on those. I can't imagine the opportunity to travel with you and have you share this view that you see of the world with others. But can you tell us a little bit about those experiences and what you're doing with those?
no, absolutely. So I've actually taught workshops in different parts of the world. I led one in Georgia with just the different companies, and so it was time to start this under my own brand name, right? And so I'm like, why am I just working for everybody else when I can actually just do it under my own company? And so I launched it this year, and they're very small groups. So it's six people, you know, max, so that I can spend one-on-one time and really work with people and really improve their photography. They do not have to be professional photographers. They do not have to have professional gear, because what I'm working on is your creative eye and your visual voice as a photographer. So you can come with a cell phone and we're going to help you get incredible images. And so we launched in Croatia. I just got back from Mongolia, where we also created an incredible video, because I also did a partnership with an ASUS laptop. I've got one going to northern Sweden, one of my favorite parts of the countries, chasing the northern lights. But in addition to chasing the northern lights, we're going to go husky sledding, reindeer sledding, spend time with the indigenous Sami, some spa ritual, you know, spa and sauna rituals. So it's going to be a really great Nordic experience. And then I've got some others in the works. But again, all of these are going to be max six people, because I think that's the best way to travel intimately in a really small group and just really learn from each other. And every day we're going to be reviewing each other's photos and giving feedback. So yeah, I hope you know, we get people to sign up. The one in February, we've got three people signed up so far. We've got three slots left if anybody wants to join us.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you they should, if they aren't already inspired to jump at the experience, they should be. I think it would be such a unique experience. And like you said, that small group size is there is something really special about it. I feel like that's kind of the sweet spots for the trips that I run to. I like six seems to be about the magic number where there's enough people for there to be a good group dynamic, enough, it's small enough that it's intimate. And also,
yes,
really importantly for me, and especially some of the places you've mentioned going, you don't feel like you're overtaking the place
yes.
you are. Like you feel like you can actually be there and not be like the attention doesn't become on you. It can still be about where you are.
Exactly, exactly, absolutely.
Well, before we end the conversation, Lola, I would love to give you the opportunity, not that you haven't already shared so many words of wisdom, but if you have one last kind of pearl of wisdom that you could share, something you heard from a mentor, a mantra, or something you've learned from your own journey you'd like to pass along, I'd love to give you the opportunity to just share that with my listeners.
So, there's so many things I could share, but I'll say just a few things. So there was a woman called Barbara Hillary, and she died, I think, either during the pandemic or before the pandemic. And Barbara Hillary, African-American woman, was the first to ski to both the North and South Poles in her 70s. Incredible, incredible woman. I was fortunate enough to interview her for some articles, and I was also planning to do an expedition with her. She was talking about it. But during one of those interviews, she said, "Lola, the world does not owe you a damn thing." And when she said that, I was just, wow. She said, "The world does not owe you a damn thing." That she, imagine if you're working a job you don't want, and then you have a heart attack, and then the last face you see is that coworker you hate, hovering over you, trying to revive you. I mean, she was just clear with her words. I was like, oh my God, Bab. And she said, you're going to have to just go and live life, right? And so for me, my advice to people is, you have your voice. Your voice is unique. That is all you have that you can offer, you know, just your truth. And then go for, and then do it audaciously. Just do it audaciously. Don't worry about rejection. Everybody gets rejected. Don't worry about failure. I mean, local pass, we can't get funding. It feels like a failure to me, but it's not. It's a learning experience. I'm growing. I'm learning from it, right? But your unique voice, go and pursue audaciously. Don't worry about, those things are what I call just, you know, skin things, you know, rejection is things for a little bit. But imagine, like you said, imagine if you never took the chance to do it, right? Never took the chance. So those are the words I will leave with you, is two of Barbara's words, which is, the world doesn't owe you a damn thing. And remember that if you're toiling away at a job that you don't like, and then, you know, it ends that way, or as well as just staying true to your voice and being audacious about your goals.
Yeah. Thank you so much for those. Well, the last thing that we have before we wrap up, one, I want you to share where people can find you, where they can learn more about your trips. They'll find, I know, links to your books, which we mentioned briefly, but we didn't have time to talk in fully about, and all of the other things that you're offering.
Yes. Yeah, no worries. No worries. So my website is akimade.com. So akimade.com. And there you can find links to everything, to my academy, to my photography portfolio, to my books. And I'm quite easy to find. You know, you can easily Google, you'll find me being busy around the web. And I'm actually quite active on social media as well. So.
Great. Okay. So I have our rapid fires. The first is, what are you reading right now?
I am reading a book called Better Never Than Late by Chika Unigwe, who is a fantastic Nigerian author. It's a collection of short stories.
The next is, what is always in your suitcase or backpack when you travel?
What is always in my suitcase? Oh, that's a great question. I always have a notebook. I actually always have a notebook because I'm always brimming with ideas. And so I'm always writing things down. In fact, I have it right next, right there, black notebook. So that's always there.
To sojourn is to travel somewhere as if you live there for a short while. Where is some place that you would still love to sojourn?
I always say, my dreams, people are always like keeping their dreams, and like I don't want anybody else to do it. I don't care, everybody has their own path in life. But I spent time in Fiji. I was there for 3 weeks, and I really, one of my dreams is actually to just go back to that region of the world, to the South Pacific, to Tahiti and all that, and just spend like a year or 2 years just island hopping and spending a lot of time in, Vanuatu, Samoa, Tonga, Papua New Guinea, like just spend time there because I really want to spend time with the cultures. I mean, in terms of photography, but also I used to play rugby and there's some big rugby nations there as well, Samoa and Tonga and stuff. So that's where I would love to just spend some time.
Papua New Guinea has been like this place of curiosity for me since I was such a little kid. And yeah, and so much of that region that it seems like there's so much to see and learn in, and so much diversity, like from place to place, probably, much like where you grew up. Like there's just so much to see in such a small area to understand and experience. So I love that.
Let's plan a trip to together next year then and go. Why not?
Okay, that sounds good. And anybody listening, come
Yes,
with
we'll do it. Why
us.
not?
So the next one. Okay, what do you eat that immediately connects you to a place that you've been?
What do I eat that immediately? You mean at the like at home, at the
Just
place when
something
I
that you
get there?
eat, it really transport you back to a moment when you are traveling.
Oh my God, that is such a great question. Wow, that's a really good one. I don't even think about that because when I travel, I bring back a lot of spices, and I am always doing that. But I would always say just when I'm eating plantain chips, so they are like kind of dry plantain chips, it always just makes me think of home, Lagos, Nigeria. So wherever I buy them, whether it's, in the US or London or where, when I eat fried plantain chips, that's just home for me.
Yeah, I remember the when I went to Africa, that was something I really loved, and I tried to replicate at home, and it was before you could buy them in a grocery store or something, and they were so disastrous. I was like, oh no, this is so sad, because they were so, it was so different and so delicious. Who is a person that inspired or encouraged you to set out and explore the world?
I think I would say my dad, as well, because my dad really did travel a lot. He's learned Italian, worked with a company in Italy. He traveled a lot. And I think just seeing him being a geologist, in the oil and gas, and that kind of also ignited my wonder. Lost a bit in terms of I wanted to see the places he was going. He was talking about being in a helicopter when the volcano was erupting and then flying around it and checking it and all that stuff. I was like, oh my God, my dad was pretty cool, right? Oh, he is pretty cool. So I think he inspired that. I think Tete Michelle, in Greenland, inspired about writing about places that are just way culturally different than you. So yeah, those are two that just kind of pop up.
Thank you. The last soul of travel is really a space to recognize and celebrate women in the industry. Who is one woman you admire and would love to recognize in this space?
Amazing. I would say the first person that comes to mind is actually Noor Saro-Wiwa. So she's also a travel writer. I think she's on staff at Condé Nast Traveler in the UK. We traveled to Greenland together, right? She's also a Nigerian heritage, and she's now a dear friend. And I would wanna bring out her name because she also writes about place. She's just got a new book out called The Black Ghosts about Black Africans in China who have called China home and are living there. So I think she's an incredible storyteller and somebody I'd like to mention.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing her name. And also just thank you so much for being here. I love getting to spend a little more time with you. I would love to spend more, and perhaps that will be on a really long flight to Papua New Guinea. That would be, we can
Exactly. I'm
manifest
serious about you. You
that.
should know me by now. I'm serious about these things. So,
Yes. We may find ourselves there. Thank you so
yes.
much for being here. I appreciate
Thank
it.
you for having me. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Soul of Travel, presented by Journey Woman. I hope you enjoyed the journey. If you loved this conversation, I encourage you to subscribe and rate the podcast. Please share episodes that inspire you with others, because this is how we extend the impact of this show. Learn more about each of my guests by reading our episode blogs, which are more than your average show notes. I think you'll love the connection. Find our episode blogs at www.soulofTravelPodcast.com. I am so proud of the way these conversations are bringing together people from around the world. If this sounds like your community, welcome. I am so happy you are here. I am all about community and would love to connect. You can find me on Facebook at Soul of Travel Podcast, or follow me on Instagram either at she.sojourns or at Soul of Travel Podcast. Stay up to date by joining the Soul of Travel Podcast mailing list. You'll also want to explore the Journey Woman community and its resources for women travelers over 50. I'd also like to share a quick thank you to my podcast producer and content magician, Carly Eduardo, CEO of Convergente. I look forward to getting to know you and hopefully hear your story.